Welcome to the Microsoft IT Pro Podcast, a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life. Each week, we'll discuss a different topic or recent news related to Office 365 and Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. The MS IT Pro Podcast is never longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started.
Good morning, Ben. How are you today?
I am here. I had a gnarly SharePoint cumulative update to apply last night that kept me up way too late. And you tie that on top of, I think I'm still recovering from the whirlwind of episodes and news and all of that from Ignite.
I've been kind of piecemealing them in and watching them as they pop up here and there. So it has been a lot to keep up with. There was a lot of news at Ignite, and it turns out there was a lot of news outside of Ignite as well.
Yeah, especially if you go back to the beginning of September. So it's kind of goofy. Our typical news episode actually hit the week after Ignite. So we're going to try to go back and cover a bunch of that news that actually came out before Ignite. We might hit a little bit of Ignite news, but again, people have gotten a lot of that. I feel like sometimes people just get burned out on hearing the same news over and over again. The only thing we might try to do, maybe we'll have to try to sneak in a SharePoint news episode here in the next couple of weeks, because there was a ton of SharePoint news at Ignite this year.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, it was quite the session to sit in and try to keep up. It was wild. That was like one of the four I made it to.
All right. Well, you know, let's do our sound effects time machine and go back in time and talk about some of these things that came out pre-Ignite, but are still really important.
All right. So I know there was some Azure AD stuff, and you being Mr. Identity Guy, do you want to talk about some of the Azure AD stuff that came out in this month?
Yeah. So there's really two changes. One big one affects users, and the other one probably affects your, well, it affects your users, but maybe like custom applications and service identities, things like that. So the first one is the login flow is changing for the Keep Me Signed In experience. So if you've ever gone to office.com, login.microsoftonline.com, all those kinds of things, there's a little checkbox on there that says, hey, go ahead and keep me signed in. And if you checked that off, you know, your browser would make a best effort attempt at keeping you signed in, keep you a cookie, all those kinds of things. So Microsoft looked at the telemetry for that and they said, you know, people complain a lot about having to log in, but we have this button that says, keep me signed in. So what's going on? Oh, it turns out people aren't clicking the button. So they're going to change the login flow a little bit. And what's going to happen is when you go ahead and you log in now, you're going to be taken through an extra set of screens that are just going to ask you really quick, would you like to stay signed in? So rather than saying, keep me signed in, it's actually going to be kind of a modal dialogue that's going to pop up. It's going to say, would you like to stay in? And it specifically calls out that they want to do this to reduce the number of times that you as the end user are going to be asked to sign in. So that's all in all a very good thing. You know, you might want to communicate to users that, hey, login flows are going to be changing. You might see these new screens. Here's why you're going to see them. And it's all in the spirit of giving you a better experience. One of the other things that they're also doing is they are changing the token lifetime defaults for Azure Active Directory. So in today's world, the default value for refresh tokens, I believe it was 24 hours out of the box. And what's going to happen is they're going to up that to 90 days. So unless you've gone ahead and customized your refresh token lifetimes already in Azure AD, or if you are federated through, because if you're federated, you're controlling your own token refresh and things like that, you're going to get this new lifetime. And again, that's all in the spirit of giving you less authentication prompts, right? So we don't want you to go ahead and log into an experience and then close your browser and come back 30 seconds later and be prompted with a login page again because some token disappeared or something else happened along the way. So this should also help out with things like service principles and like managed service identities in Azure AD. So if you've ever worked with your friendly neighborhood developer and they've got a custom application in Azure AD, sometimes those token refreshes could be a little bit weird and you might have had to customize those too. So these longer token refreshes should help out a bunch there.
Nice. I like it because we all know how much users dislike having to type in a username and password more than they absolutely have to.
Well, we try and keep those down as much as we can, and hopefully it all works out for everybody.
Yeah, so there were some other updates too to Office 365, just kind of some high-level administrative announcements around domains, setting up and removing domains in Office 365, as well as easily identify guest users. So this all came out in a single blog post out on Tech Community. And one of them is now when you add a domain, you can do it with email verification. So before it was text record that you had to add to DNS. I think there was one other way. Maybe there was one other way to do it, and I am completely blanking on what it is right now. But now, if you want to verify by email, you can choose to get verified by email. It'll send an email to your Office 365 administrator, and then you get a code in that. You throw the code in the domain verification, and your domain is verified. So I know this used to be kind of, this could be a little bit of a pain sometimes, especially if you had to wait for DNS to update. So this should make it a lot quicker, a lot simpler, just to get that domain verified when you add a new domain to your tenant.
Yeah, that'll simplify that flow a ton. But being a little bit more on the side of the fence, we're usually, you know, the teams that do DNS and things like that, wasn't too bad to get that TXT or record created, but this will just make it a lot quicker, right? So hopefully your domain verification goes faster, and you are going to have, of course, have email addresses set up for those domains and things like that to get all that through. So that might be something to think about. So you might still end up with TXT records or some of the other verification methods along the way.
Yeah, and they haven't pulled any of those out. So I know you've probably never been like me where you're like sitting there hitting verify, 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 waiting for that DNS to propagate, right?
Oh, we've all done that.
So another one is actually around domain removal. So in the past, when you maybe had a domain you didn't want to use anymore, you wanted to remove, there were certain dependencies. You had to get rid of that domain on in certain user properties. There were a few different prerequisites, essentially, for removing a domain. So now if you have domains with users, groups, application dependencies that don't exceed 100 total across all of those, you can now delete this domain using an automated process that they've rolled out. So using this automated process, instead of you going through and doing all the domains, Microsoft will figure out all those dependencies, where those domains might live, what they might, where they might be set up, and it'll just remove all those dependencies and then remove your domain. So it's good in that it's a lot simpler. It's bad in that if you had to remove it yourself, you knew exactly where everything was and you could check and make sure everything was all set. Now you could just do the automated process and something might break that you forgot about. Again, it's kind of a great, it's nice and easy. Be careful if you're going to do the automated process to make sure you actually have everything transferred over to the new domain or set up with the new domain you wanted to.
Yeah, you might want to make sure all that stuff's there before you click the delete button.
Yeah, all of a sudden your CEO, I can't get my email anymore.
That stuff wasn't important anyway.
Yeah, who cares about email? It's all supposed to be in SharePoint and Teams now. Anyways, the last one was easily identify guest users. This was just adding a simple little icon next to guest users in Office 365 if you're going to go in and look at your active users. So as you scroll through the list, you can quickly identify them with an icon. I suppose under the status, having the word guest may have not been enough. Or there's, you could just go to the guest view and view all of your guest users. But anyways, they've added another icon, another way to kind of see those guests. I think this is going to be more and more important to be able to easily identify and find them. With some of the changes they're making, even around adding external users to Teams and the B2B stuff, you're going to want to be able to quickly identify those guests if you do have to remove access to one of them or do something with those. So again, kind of a nice little friendly update. It really impact functionality at all.
Yeah. Well, they're also kind of changing over that status piece. So the nice thing about the guest bit is if you've ever gone into the Office 365 user admin and you sat there and you were seeing like status would have been typically in the past, like synced with local directory, cloud identity, user, things like that. So now that status field actually just denotes license status, or it will, right? So I assigned an E3 to this user. And then the other status, like you said, will be guest, so beyond the little icon. So one of the nice things you can do with those is you can just export those to CSVs really quick, and then you'll be able to go ahead, turn it into a table, and kind of create whatever filters and pivots and things you want to do your reporting in there, which is nice. So you don't have to whip out some PowerShell or go over into the Azure AD side where you would typically would have had to go to see that information.
Yeah. Again, nice little features here and there. So what else do we have?
There was some stuff around advanced threat protection. So advanced threat protection is getting, so ATP, you're getting safe links now, and you're going to be able to do, well, you've always had safe links, but you're going to be able to do custom URL lists in there. So if you have specific domains that might have been flagged, you know, maybe they were part of like Constant Contact or something like that, you're going to be able to go ahead and basically whitelist those domains and push them through. So I believe this applies to the entire organization. You can't do it like per user or per group, those kind of things, because it does sit on kind of the Exchange transport side of things in the ATP service. But now, if you do have those internal sites, you always want them to be marked as safe. You're going to have some operational control there, which should be a pretty good thing.
Yeah, that will be nice, because who needs, well, I suppose we've dealt with users. You could have, you may want safe links internally. Who knows what people are putting in SharePoint?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Anyways, so another one. Did you ever use GigJam?
I installed it once. I got thoroughly confused, and then I deleted it.
Yeah, me too. It's dead. We don't need to talk much about it. It's been in preview for 2 years, 3 years. I don't know. It's been in preview for a long time. It's being retired.
Well, I mean, it had to go away at some point, right?
Yeah, I honestly have no idea. I don't know of anybody that ever actually used it.
You know, there were probably like two or three people, and they probably like wrote an article for CMS Wire or something like that, but that was about it. Yeah, so it goes away. I think this is part of that focus on and really doubling down on the commitment to things like Flow and Power Apps, and really SharePoint is kind of a communication and storage hub in the background for all that.
Yeah, I agree. It was a nice attempt. It was a nice thought. They tried something, but in the end, it just didn't really work very well or at all.
There is the or at all part.
Yeah.
So one of those things that came out that's going to be a little bit better for collaboration is you now have the ability to set default link permissions in Office 365 for OneDrive for Business and SharePoint Online workloads. So hopefully most people should see this already, or if you're in first release for your whole tenant, you might have been playing with this for a while already. So what you're going to be able to do is you're going to be able to change the default sharing links. You know, you go into OneDrive and a user just clicks share.
Yep.
You're going to be able to update that. So you can make those view onlys instead of edits, which is kind of the default today is, hey, I just want to create a link and it's going to be view and edit, and be able to change that around and have some more control over it. So I would think that's a feature that a lot of organizations are going to want to take a look at. Or if they've said, hey, we try and restrict sharing in some form or another, this might be another way to go back and open it up a little bit more.
That will be nice, because it can be really easy to miss. If you're trying to share some content externally and you don't want somebody to edit it, like you said, or your policy is, hey, it's always view by default, this take some of that burden off of end users to make sure they switch to view, and you can set up that default. It'll be nice. Another one, OneDrive SharePoint related. This one has been in preview for a while. I actually turned it on in my environment, and now it looks like beginning in October, it'll be turned on by default to existing organizations. I also believe in the past, this was already turned on for new organizations, but it's the support for the pound symbol and the percent symbol in file names. So you can have even more special characters now in your file names. They've been doing a good job with slowly eliminating the restricted characters and file names. I have actually had some clients that have run into some of this where they have files in it. It can be kind of a pain when files maybe aren't syncing or you always have to rename files. Personally, I don't put a pound and a percent in many of my file names, but if you do, it's now going to be supported. I'm trying to remember. I think there's only like two or three special characters now that aren't supported in file names in SharePoint Online and OneDrive.
This takes the list down to, there might not be any left after this one, actually.
I'm going to look. Look at your special characters on your keyboard.
Yeah. No, it takes the list down really low. This doesn't remove restrictions for things like the folder names that have to be, you know, you have certain restricted like folder names, like you can't have a folder called like underscore forms or things like that. So those aren't going to sync through because those are kind of tied into the back end of the way SharePoint's built out. But like you said, this really goes ahead and throws that limit down. One of the nice things about this is this applies to not just the creation and kind of storage of those things in SharePoint. It also applies to sync. So I think most people could wrap their heads around, hey, my files can't have special names when they were already created in SharePoint or they were over on that side and they were natively working there. The big problem or area that I always saw with this was you would go and do a OneDrive deployment and users would try and move a bunch of their personal files out of their My Docs and they would just dump it in and then you'd have this big red air flagging up on the OneDrive client saying, I can't sync things for you because you've got to rename this, 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 and this. Microsoft did have a hot fix out there for this for a while, like one of those like easy fixes, just run the DigiCab and it would go through and, you know, look at your OneDrive for Business and just kind of bulk rename your files. But, you know, again, this reduces friction and pushes it down a little bit. Hopefully a lot of the migration vendors get their tooling updated. So I know there's some companies that do like automated renaming just as part of it. Like, you know, they'll change those special characters into underscores and things like that. So hopefully they get those rule sets updated and new builds pushed out because this helps to, you know, increase fidelity and keep things looking the way they really do need to look.
Absolutely. Nice change. So one other one, and then we'll take a brief break for our sponsor. Was this is another updated feature for OneDrive and SharePoint, is a new list view to include a compact version for OneDrive and SharePoint on the web. This was back the beginning of September, and you should be seeing it the following days. I haven't actually gone in and looked for this yet to see what it looks like. I don't know if you've played with it, but
yeah, I haven't seen this one.
Yeah, it's a new view of the lists under the View Modes menu. It's supposed to actually be completely rolled out by the end of September, so it should be there. I'm going to have to go back into my tenant and look for this. But it's just a new view that gives you a much more compact view of lists. I'm guessing this is going to help for mobile, maybe some smaller screens. Again, it's a new compact list view. Go check it out. It should be in your tenant based on this news article. I failed to adequately test it beforehand.
Yeah, well, you know, if you're browsing in mobile and you're not using the SharePoint app or things like that, and you're just inside like iOS or Chrome or Dolphin or whatever, you need to just go download the app from the App Store anyway and get it to where it needs to be.
I agree. All right, so with that, let's take a quick break, hear a word from BitWizards, and we will be right back.
We'd like to thank BitWizards for sponsoring the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast. They've won Florida Trend Magazine's Best Companies to Work For 8 years running and have been a Microsoft Gold Partner since 2001. Nobody loves Azure like BitWizards. BitWizards is looking for talented, like-minded IT pros with a knack for Azure. If you're listening to this podcast, you'd likely be a great fit at BitWizards. Just think, you could be listening to Scott and me on the beach. Go to bitwizards.com/cloudsmith right now to apply.
All right, so we're back. And, you know, let's keep talking about apps. So, you know, you mentioned kind of those compact list views. And, you know, I was talking a little bit about the SharePoint app. So there's been some updates to Outlook on mobile. So a while ago, Outlook on mobile for iOS got support for a couple of different add-ins inside it. So you had Evernote and a few others that came in. You're getting that same support on the Android side now too. So now you've got support for add-ins across Outlook on the web, Windows, Mac, iOS, and Android as well, which will be super awesome. So this was rolled out at the end of August, and everybody should kind of see it in their clients today. If you don't see add-ins there, you might need to go talk to your Exchange admin and say, hey, why can't we do this? Do you have a policy in place that's preventing it or anything like that along those lines? So along with, you know, the new stuff that comes along, so, you know, Microsoft giveth and then Microsoft taketh away as well. FindTime was retired. I don't know if anybody ever used FindTime. I used to use FindTime a ton. It let you do scheduling with external users, like not cross calendar sharing, but let everybody like take a poll. Hey, what times are you available? FindTime would automatically schedule your meeting, push those kind of things through. So Microsoft went ahead, they had FindTime, and then they just got rid of it.
Yeah, it sounds like they're going to be replacing it though with something or trying to actually pull that functionality in and make it just native to Outlook, which will be nice as long as it works the same way. Because you're right, I used it a lot too. I used it especially with trying to find time with clients because you can never actually see their free busy time. You can never actually see their calendars. So the FindTime app or the FindTime add-in was really nice for that. Again, I think it's coming to Outlook natively. Hopefully it has a lot of that same functionality or all the same functionality.
Yeah, so there's two different things that are happening here. So they're starting to pull some of that functionality into Outlook natively. And it's really, the way they announced it and talked about it, they only talked about Outlook on the web. So there's going to be a pull feature in there. So when you come into your calendar and you say, hey, now I want to pull people for a time to meet, they didn't talk about any updates to Outlook on the desktop for that functionality. So one of the nice things about FindTime was that it was available in both places. There's also a service on the back end, which is Cortana driven. So Cortana and cognitive services with some natural language processing and a bunch of other things called calendar.help, which you can... Theoretically, the way it's supposed to work is...
I was going to say, I want to see you try to explain this one and how it's going to work.
Yeah. So in theory, the way this one works is there's basically a bot that you CC on your messages. So I would send you a message and I would say, hey, Ben, let's get together for a meeting sometime next week. And then you say, hey, and you CC this bot and it's basically, hey, Cortana, help me schedule a meeting. And then the bot reaches out and kind of talks to everybody and figures out what times everybody's available and push things through. In practice, I haven't seen that go so well. So like one of the nice things about FindTime was it was a really consolidated experience, right? Everybody went to the same place. You all saw the updates in real time. And with the bot, it's kind of disconnected and out of process and pushed all over the place. So yeah, it's a little bit weird. If you haven't tried it out, it's really not too hard to go ahead and sign up for it and push it through, but your mileage may vary. I really wasn't a fan of that one, especially compared to what FindTime offered.
Yeah, I think I tried it once or twice. It may have gotten better. Microsoft makes improvements to those things. Maybe I'll have to go try it again, but I tried it before and I wasn't a big fan of the calendar.help. So another app that has actually made it, I think it's made it out of preview now, is the Yammer desktop app.
Yes, we were all asking for this. And that is about the most sarcastic voice I can put behind that.
Yeah, I don't know who it was because Microsoft seemed to imply that there were a bunch of people asking for it. I don't know if it was all like the hardcore Yammer users that just kind of got absorbed into Microsoft when Microsoft bought Yammer, or who exactly wanted this desktop app. Apparently there were enough people out there that Microsoft decided they should do it. So I've had it in preview for a little while just because I wanted to try it. We talked about it on another episode. Again, it's pretty much just a browser view, the page view, wrapped in a shell, and it's put on your desktop. If you don't want to open a browser to get to Yammer and you just like having more apps open instead of more tabs open, maybe it's for you. But again, it doesn't really bring any additional functionality. It just puts the web page in an app for you, based on what I've seen.
Yeah, that's all it does. And it doesn't, from what I've seen, I'm not in too many like overly active Yammer networks these days, but from what I've seen with it, it also didn't include some of the functionality that Yammer Desktop Notifier had, where it would actually pop up a little toast or an alert notification when a new message came in to you or you had a new follower, and really try and kind of drive some of that social engagement. I've seen organizations where if they have a lot of stickiness with Yammer, and they do have a lot of users in there, they would deploy things like the desktop notifier to their desktops so that when they did all company announcements and things like that, users would get a notification on their desktop, right? Like that's a neat little desired behavior. But it seems like some of that alerting and news and things might be moving over to SharePoint. So I'm not sure where Yammer goes and what it does with all this. They did build the app in a way, so you can package it, push it out with SCCM. You could do like a group policy install. You can point users to it, you know, however you want to do it. If you do choose to roll it out there, hopefully they add some improvements around kind of notifications and toasts and things like that.
Yeah, this kind of goes off on a tangent. I think if they kept Yammer around, what I would like to see is them actually add, instead of having its own desktop app, somehow add it into Teams or somehow pull the two of them together. So you kind of have your collaboration teams and you have your company-wide team. Again, I don't know how feasible it is on the back end, but with where they're going with Teams, to me, it would make more sense to try to pull Yammer into Teams somehow. Who knows? It's just me shooting the breeze.
You know, you'll have to have... The Yammer stuff's interesting, especially since... I'm going to rant, right? Since you started it. So they made that transition of Yammer groups to Office 365 groups. So now all your Yammer groups that used to have email addresses, now they all show up in the GAL, right? Because they're Office 365 groups. And then you see them in the Office 365 groups directory when you go into like Discover through like Outlook on the web or one of those experiences, but then you can't get into them because they don't have conversations because they're a Yammer group. So you just see membership and you're running all over the place. So like you said, it'd be nice to have a consolidated view of not just like Yammer and Teams, but really here's all my Office 365 groups, regardless of what it is. If it's an Outlook group, if it's a team, if it's a planner group, if it's a Yammer group, like whatever it is, let's actually get that directory and build it out and give people a way to figure out really what they should be targeting into and what groups they should be joining. There's going to be a ton to do around discovery in that space.
I don't know. We could probably spend a whole episode ranting on this. So I'm gonna go off on one more quick rant before we wrap it up because we're getting really close to time. And it's kind of ties to apps, is the app launcher is changing again. I've lost track of how many times it is.
It's going to be flatter and whiter this time.
I liked being able to customize my tiles. I like different sized tiles for things I really needed to care about and things I really didn't care as much about, but still wanted to get to. Like, I feel like I had just finally gotten my app launcher the way I wanted it with all the rearranging and grouping and all of that. And then they announced that they're going to change it again.
You only like tiles in the app launcher if you're in one of those few tenants where like it would remember your settings as you move tiles around and, you know, it would remember your sweep bar and the way you would set that up. But if you're in one of those crappy tenants like I usually end up in all the time where it doesn't remember those settings. And every time you go into a new computer or a new browser, everything's back to the defaults or it's different in Outlook versus SharePoint. Hopefully this brings a more consistent experience, right? Consistency is good. Consistency can kind of like, you can drive into behaviors around that. So hopefully they can keep this one around for a while too.
I suppose, but why not fix what's broken instead of coming out with something brand new to fix what's broken?
You're asking for the moon. And all I can give you is some crushed like moon rock dust.
Oh, I'm going to go cry after this episode.
Yeah, it happens.
Anyways, that about wraps us up for the day. So we got through a bunch of news. We actually didn't include all of it. Scott was giving me a hard time. I have 30 pages of news headlines that include some details, but there was a lot of news. Maybe we'll have to do another news episode. Like we said, we'll do a SharePoint news episode here coming up because there was a bunch more SharePoint news. But for today, that wraps us up.
Awesome. Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Scott. If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.